The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to episode 97 of The Catholics of Oz. The Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolates and apps, providence or productivity, you can hear it right now on The Catholics of Oz. Hello, I'm Lindsay Sant and welcome back. It's been a while. Welcome to episode 97 of The Catholics of Oz. We'll explain why it's been a while in a moment. But first of all, hello. And today I'm with my lovely birdie sister, Caroline Knights. I had to find something and that's the first thing that came to mind. Tell us why I said that, Caroline. What happened during the week?
Oh, because I adopted a birdie, not because I was intentionally looking for a bird this week, but a little bird came and adopted our family this week. It's like a little lorikeet. It was all yellow and he's obviously someone's pet, but I don't know whose he is. So for the moment at least, or if I never find his parents, that's fine. We're going to keep him, but we've got a new pet bird and we've named him Sunny.
Sunny.
And you may hear him in the background screeching sometimes because he's very vocal in the mornings. But yes, he's lovely. He likes to come and sit on my shoulder, give me little kisses. Yeah. If I eat, he wants to know what I'm eating.
He's a very friendly bird.
You know, yeah, he's really sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, we're not letting him out while the cats are around. I let the cats out and then I open the cage. Don't worry. It's all under control.
We've seen those cartoons.
It's all under control.
Yeah, that's right.
That's it. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
We could have well named him Tweety because Tweety. He is all yellow. Yes.
Yeah. So first thing we need to say is, yes, so there may be some animal noises during this podcast. So at the moment, I'm home alone because my family has taken my older son, Damien, to his tennis. So there is a dog in my lap, my little dog, Luna. We should put photos in our Facebook page later, actually, just share some animals so people know what we're talking about.
We should, yes.
She's usually a very quiet, peaceful dog, but if she hears a noise, she will start barking. So if you hear any barks, you know why. She's looking at me right now, giving me the eyes. No, not
she's
right now.
She's very cute.
Yeah, sleep doggo. So why haven't we been podcasting lately? So what's happened? So here's the deal. It's actually, it's a very parental choice. So, what happened was my son, as I mentioned before, he started his tennis and, the way it works out is he now plays on Saturdays. He's moved up a little bit. So he was playing on Sunday mornings before, which was easy to manage. But now he plays on Saturdays right at the time when we normally record a podcast. So he's rostered on to play at his home courts, which are 10 minutes away from us, and then at his away courts, which can be anywhere from 10 to 20 to 30 minutes away. So on weekends like this one, he's rostered at his home court, which my wife is more than happy to drive him to because it's not far away. However, the way it was set up was that we'd be podcasting on the away games and Isabel would have to drive him to those like away games instead. So we asked Dom and he kindly agreed to let us shift our schedule. So now we're going to be releasing every other fortnight. So you might have been used to our podcast coming out like last week's fortnight, if that makes sense. Now it's going to be, these weekends. So this weekend that you're listening and then every fortnight from now for the rest of the year. So we're continuing our fortnightly schedule. I'm sure that made a lot of sense to everyone. Don't you think, Caroline? You got me. You got what I was saying, yeah?
Well, I'm here, so I think I understand.
You haven't collapsed from my terrible explanation.
I turned up on the right.
Yeah. You turn up at the right time. Yeah. The point is, we're back. Oh, and also, well, we're not fully back because we are missing someone today.
Oh, yeah.
So, Lino Sabol, our other co-host, he normally is with us faithfully every morning with his coffee ready to go. However, him and his wife, Bernadette, are currently on their way to Malta. So by the time of recording, they'll be in Malta for their two-week holiday. They're having a beautiful break in that beautiful jewel of an island in the middle of the Mediterranean.
Our homeland.
Our homeland. Yeah, that place we call home. Yeah, beautiful Malta. So, Lino, we wish you well. He's probably going to be listening. I reckon he'll listen. So we should, make fun of him. Hope you're enjoying yourself. We have a running joke that Lino struggles to say pastitsi. So, yeah, so Lino, I hope by now you've worked that out. Don't want you upsetting the Maltese
people. He'll get it by the time, somebody will make him say it correctly while he's in Malta. Don't you worry.
Yeah,
he'll be eating enough of them, that's for sure.
You can't
really escape the pastitsis when you're in Malta.
You can't go to Malta and not eat pastitsi. I mean,
No. Well, you get served them by you know, family and friends, and also their street food. So like you just, they're everywhere.
Yeah, on the streets of Valletta, everywhere else, you just, lots of places, just here you go. Yep.
Along with all the other delicious food.
Oh, I know. I'm missing tuna pie right now. Oh, man.
The masa tart. Oh, man. Yummy. Stop. Anyway.
Yeah, all those Maltese foods. Maybe not snails. I haven't got around to that yet. I just hasn't done it for me, but who knows?
Snails?
Yeah.
No, can't do that one myself. No.
And I also totally know Chisk. That's how you say it, the Maltese beer.
Oh, yeah.
And it's
Maltese beer.
It's quite good. You'd be,
And a bit of kinni, which
is
like a strong herbal soft drink.
Yeah, bitter orange, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, I don't remember what exactly they've got in it. But
it's like the Dr. Pepper of Malta. But the thing is, everyone loves it there.
Yes, it is like that.
Yeah, it's basically what people drink instead of Coke in Malta. They love it everywhere you go.
Although they do drink Coke too.
They do, yeah. As a quick anecdote, when I went to Malta in 2016 with my family, we went to visit a relative and she only had diet kinni.
Oh, no.
And it was room temperature. And so me, Isabel and Damien were looking at each other because it was a bit, don't want to offend anyone. So I drank mine, all good. And I was looking at Isabel going, drink it. And she's like, I don't want it. I'm like, no, drink it. You know what she did? She got Damien's and hers and she poured it into my glass and I had to drink both of them.
She's a smart girl.
She is, yeah. So I drank much diet kitty room temperature that day, but then I washed it down with a chisk and I was all good.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny. Yeah, they tend not to serve, I don't know, the store the drinks in the fridge. They're like stored outside and then you can put ice with them if you want to.
But kinny, I feel you just need to drink it cold.
I mean, not me personally. I can't handle the flavor. It's really strong. I've tried many times, but
I'm 90% sure it's bitter orange flavor. That's what it is.
Probably, yeah.
Can Google it later. Similar.
There's another one that's like LMP in New Zealand is a herbal like soft drink as well. And I try to drink that as well. I think it's just that similar flavor, which I just can't really tolerate.
So popular is kinni that people import it to Australia. Maltese people who are here import it.
They do. You can get it here.
You can get it here.
I like the smell of it. Like I really enjoy the smell of it.
Yeah, I agree. I like the smell of it. Yeah.
It smells lovely, but the taste is just so strong. I don't know. Anyway, if you're Maltese and you like kinni, let us know. We'd love to know if there's any other kinni drinkers out there.
Yeah. And that was our segment on Malta. Da, 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 da.
Ta-da. Ta-da. Anyway, we could keep going, honestly.
We could. We could just do a Maltese podcast for an hour. Just talking about,
we could do a podcast about Malta.
Lots of churches. Go visit it. Anyway, moving on. And let's talk about Faith Beyond Borders.
Actually, feeling rather good about this. I think we've all arrived at a very special place, eh? Spiritually, ecumenically.
How do you make somebody love you without affecting free will?
Welcome to my world, son. You come up with an answer to that one, you let me know.
Yes, I had to work very hard to pass Latin and theology.
Oh, quite. Those are, of course, the most important things.
Oh, yeah.
I'd sit this one out, Cap.
I don't see how I can.
These guys come from legend. They're basically gods.
There's only one god, man. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that.
So today, when this podcast is released, it'll be a couple of days before Reconciliation Week in Australia. So every year we have Reconciliation Week to mark the cause for reconciliation between Indigenous Australians and the rest of the Australian population. And this has been a cause that's been going on for a long time. So there'll be things like, I think it was the referendum to vote in 1967. Aboriginals were given the right to vote in the referendum. And that came from a long struggle, you know, since Federation when the Australian states came together as one nation and Aboriginals were not part of the Constitution. They were completely ignored. And, you know, there's been struggles through the White Australia policy and, you know, so many other things, land rights and whatever. And by the way, we're not activists. We're just telling history as it is, right? And we had the national apology in, I'm going to say 2008. I hope I'm correct about that. So Kevin Rudd at the time, he listened to the call for an apology, which had been, you know, the call for an apology had been going for many, many years. And he gave a national apology to Indigenous people for all the wrongs that had been done, including as I mentioned, the White Australia policy, the removing of Aboriginal children from families in order to make them more European, and all those things that were going on. By the way, this is actual Australian history. You can Google it. And now we're at a point in Australian history where the latest and probably most important cause for recognition of Indigenous people and reconciliation with them is happening. So where we are at the moment is that the Indigenous Australians gathered in 2017. There are 250-something representatives, and this was after having national dialogues all around the country. They gathered all the feedback from those dialogues and gathered in Alice Springs, and they held another conference to decide what it was that Aboriginal people, based on what they were hearing, were calling on the Australian government to do. So out of that came this beautiful statement called the Uluru Statement from the Heart. That's the whole title of it. And the key thing is to remember that where does this statement come from? It comes from the heart. And I'll say more about that later on. Now, what's important about this is that the Catholic Church in Australia supports it. So I want to make that really, really clear. This isn't just something that a flash in the pan, something we're making up off the top of our heads. The Catholic Church supports this statement. And I'll say more about that a little bit later on. So, Caroline, we've got the Uluru Statement from the Heart here. I was wondering if you could just read it for us. And the reason why I say that is because the Catholic Church in Australia has recently asked Catholics to read the statement. Again, if you haven't read the statement before, to read it. It's actually a very short statement, and there are images of it that people can look up online, and I've got links in our show notes to it as well. So, Caroline, if you could read for us the Uluru Statement from the Heart.
No problem. Okay. We gathered at the 2017 National Constitutional Convention, coming from all points of the southern sky, make this statement from the heart. Our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes were the first sovereign nations of the Australian continent and its adjacent islands, and possessed it under our own laws and customs. This our ancestors did, according to the reckoning of our culture from the creation, according to the common law from time immemorial, and according to science more than 60,000 years ago. This sovereignty is a spiritual notion, the ancestral tie between the land or Mother Nature and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who were born therefrom, remain attached thereto, and must one day return thither to be united with our ancestors. This link is the basis of the ownership of the soil, or better, of sovereignty. It has never been ceded or extinguished, and coexists with the sovereignty of the Crown. How could it be otherwise that peoples possessed for a land of 60 millennia and the sacred link disappears from the world history in merely the last 200 years? With substantive constitutional change and structural reform, we believe this ancient sovereignty can shine through as a fuller expression of Australia's nationhood. Proportionally, we are the most incarcerated people on the planet. We are not an innately criminal people. Our children are alien from their families at unprecedented rates. This cannot be because we have no love for them, and our youth languish in detention in obscene numbers. They should be our hope for the future. These dimensions of our crisis tell plainly the structural nature of our problem. This is the torment of our powerlessness. We seek constitutional reforms to empower our people and to take rightful place in our own country. When we have power over our destiny, our children will flourish. They will walk in two worlds, and their culture will be a gift to the country. We call for the establishment of a First Nations voice enshrined in the Constitution. Makarrata is culmination of our agenda, the coming together after a struggle. It captures our aspirations for a fair and truthful relationship with the people of Australia and a better future for our children based on justice and self-determination. We seek a Makarrata Commission to supervise a process of agreement making between governments and First Nations and truth telling about our history. In 1967, we were counted. In 2017, we seek to be heard. We leave base camp and start our trek across this vast country. We invite you to walk with us in a movement of the Australian people for a better future.
Thanks so much for reading that, Caroline. As an Australian, Caroline, what do you feel that the message to you is? Because it's a message to all of us. So what do you feel, before I go on to the church's approach to this, what do you feel is the message to you as an Australian person?
Oh, I really feel, that really does get you in the heart, doesn't it? Talking about children, talking about them not being able to participate fully in their own country. Aboriginals weren't recognized as actually even people for a long time, you know, and that's horrible. So why can't they just be recognized as actual Australians that they are? They are the Australians of this country. And all the rest of us are immigrants who've been lucky enough to live here and share this beautiful country with them. So I think, yeah, we need to be united. They need to feel validated. They need to feel welcomed in their own country, which is a very silly thing to even have to say.
So at that conference, they then had a votes on the final form of the statement. So 97% of the delegates there, representing the vast majority of Indigenous people, approved that statement. And so far, national polling says that 80% of Indigenous people support that statement. And so what we have is basically this is, you know, a very, very high level of support for what it is that they're calling for. So first of all, the statement, if you read it, it's not hostile. It is firstly from the heart to our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a call for greater unity by incorporating Indigenous people into our constitution, which is, we do have a mechanism for that called a referendum, which we can talk about later. So this is a very important moment in Australian history right now, because later this year, we are going to have a referendum and Australians are going to be able to vote yes or no to incorporating an Indigenous voice to Parliament. And this is what the first, it's calling for three things: voice, treaty, and truth. So the voice being that there is an Aboriginal voice set up in the Parliament, you know, so it has more power and force to be able to speak about Indigenous issues directly to politicians. So when a government is trying to make a decision or pass legislation in relation to Indigenous people, there is this body that is part of the discussion, which is really important, because had this been established a while ago, a lot of the issues that Indigenous people are facing at the moment may not be as bad as they are now. And we talk about closing the gap, you know, the gap of health and, you know, imprisonment, education, all those other things between Indigenous people and between everyone else in Australia is quite large. And that gap is not necessarily improving either. There's a lot of work to do.
No, it's not.
A voice to Parliament will actually make a massive difference, because Indigenous people will be able to say, this is what Indigenous people need, rather than people telling them what they need, which is which is how we kind of operate at the moment. Yeah. So to move on then, the Australian Catholic Church, and in fact, not just the Australian Catholic Church, but the majority of mainstream religious traditions in Australia all got behind this statement. So in 2022, they got together on one of the anniversaries of the Uluru Statement. I think it was in May of 2022. And they signed a joint resolution on the Uluru Statement from the Heart. And it said the following: on this day in 2017, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples came together at Uluru and asked Australians to walk with them towards a better future. Through the Uluru Statement from the Heart, Indigenous Australians asked for constitutional recognition through a constitutionally guaranteed voice in their own affairs. As leaders representing diverse religious communities, we declare our support of the Uluru Statement and its call for a First Nations voice guaranteed by the Constitution. We endorse this reform as necessary, right, and reasonable. Indigenous Australians must be now afforded their rightful place in the Australian Constitution. There have been many processes and much work completed. The one thing left to do is let the Australian people have their say. We call on political leaders to take immediate bipartisan action to hold a referendum on a First Nations voice. So that statement was signed by Archbishop Mark Coleridge as the head of the Australian Catholic Bishops Conference, which means all the Australian Catholic bishops support that declaration. And therefore the Catholic Church, and I've talked about this through the Plenary Council discussion we had last year as well, the Catholic Church in Australia supports the Uluru Statement from the Heart in full, basically. And here's what the point I'm going to make next. I've seen sometimes where Catholics have come out in support and maybe have been attacked by other Catholics online, for example, for supporting the statement and all these statements that have been made. But the thing is, the attacks are political, right? you know, this is just a leftist thing, this is just a whatever else. The resource I'm going to share next, I think, makes an important distinction that this is not a political issue, this is a moral issue. And this is why the Catholic Church supports the Uluru Statement from the Heart. Not because, now, politics is the mechanism we need because, you know, it's in order to change the Constitution, it's always been that way. But this isn't about a left versus right thing. And by the way, I think I've said before how nonsensical I think it is that any of us think we should be left versus right anyway. But this is a moral issue. And if we look at this moral issue from the heart, then it's a no-brainer that saying yes to this change in the Constitution is what we should do. The next resource, Caroline, before I go on, because I've just ranted a bit there, is there anything you wanted to add to that while I get my next resource ready and settle my dog down again?
She's active, isn't she?
She's been active now, yeah.
I agree that it's not a political issue. It's a human issue. It's an issue of basic human rights, of being recognized as a person in your own country, having the same rights as everybody else in your own country, being able to have the same resources, education, health, housing, not being treated differently when you're arrested. You know, there's been many deaths in custody because I'm pretty sure that that's got something to do with racism, quite frankly. This is a really important step for us as Australians to take. We don't need to be left or right about it. We just need to get it done. I don't understand personally why there's so much uproar against it. Like, there are certain people who are really against it. These are just people who want to be recognized as people, as citizens, as owners of their own land in their own country. So yeah, that's, I'm pretty passionate about it. I'm not activist either, but I just like feel for humans to have their rights as humans. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. I'm passionate about it too. And again, not because I'm an activist. I'm not really politically engaged. Again, I don't really identify with a left or right perspective, and I don't see myself as better than anyone who thinks they're left or right, by the way, either. I should point that out. But I think our faith, you know, I keep going back to, you know, Matthew 25, when I was naked, you gave me clothes. When I was thirsty, you gave me drink. And I know I'm butchering that, right? When I was a stranger, you welcomed me. You know, it's like, where do we see the face of Christ, you know, in people and in the marginalized, right? That, you know, Pope Francis tells us to go to the peripheries. Well, the peripheries are calling. Now here's the real test of our faith, right? Do we listen, or do we let politics get in the way of fairness, of doing the moral thing? So let's move on to the next resource I have here. In my research about this, because obviously if I want to decide if I'm voting yes or no, I want to do my homework, right? I want to just see what's on the news and listen to the next talking head decide whether it's a good or bad thing, right? So I've done a bit of research, and I've got more to go, by the way. I'm not an authority on this, right? However, I did come across a resource which really knocked me sideways in a good way. It's a beautiful resource. It's a book, and there's a link in the show notes to where you can purchase this book from Amazon, because you can't find it anywhere online. It's called Statements from the Soul, The Moral Case for the Uluru Statement from the Heart. And this is edited by Shireen Morris and Damien Freeman. And my understanding is that they're actually both from the opposite ends of the political spectrum, right? But they've come together in support of the Uluru Statement, and they reached out to religious individuals and religious leaders, many of whom I understand signed that statement I just read before, and asked them to write about the statement from the heart. So each of them in this book, in this beautiful book, I should say, have made the religious moral case for why we should vote yes. One of those, fortunately, I'm just really happy that, you know, this just stuck out, right, is a good friend of our show, Archbishop of Melbourne, Peter A. Commonsoli. He wrote an essay in this book, and it's a beautiful essay. It's a great read. And again, I've got no way to share it with everyone. You'd have to purchase a copy for yourself. However, I don't know if I'll do it justice today, but I do just want to share a couple of excerpts on the moral case that he makes. Now, this is the case he makes amongst many other religious leaders. So we have other Christian leaders. There's a Buddhist perspective. There's an Islamic perspective, a Sikh perspective. I've still got a few others to go. So, but there's a whole lot of religious leaders who have come together who recognize, you know, that this is the moral thing to do through the perspective of their faith. And if there's one thing our faiths generally hold in common, it's the dignity of the human person, right? That our faith calls us to serve all humans. So I'm going to just read a couple of excerpts. Again, I won't do it justice, but I'll try and get at least to the heart of some of the things that he's trying to say. One of the things he says is that the Uluru Statement from the Heart is a revelation of grace and a voice to be heard if we genuinely believe in things like a fair go and mateship. He calls it a gift, and he says, speaking in bold and modest ways, the gift of the Uluru Statement from the heart urges us to forge a better future for the First Nations people of this country for generations to come. It does so by way of invitation and not imposition into the shared space of Australian society. A gift, however, only has value if there is a receiver who welcomes it openly and humbly. The exchange then becomes an act of love. And I was immediately reminded, and we did an episode on this, on John Paul II's visit to Australia, where he spoke to Indigenous people, and he said something along the lines of, the church will not fully, in Australia, won't fully be whole until Aboriginal people make their contribution, and until that contribution is joyfully received by everyone else. Now, I am paraphrasing that, but that's essentially what John Paul II said, right? So it's an act of love to receive Indigenous people into the church, and not just to make Aboriginals Catholic, but to receive their whole self, their culture, their who they are, as part of our church community, as part of the whole. Just like we welcome other cultures into the church and incorporate their cultures too. He says that exchange then of receiving the gift that from the heart that they've offered us is an act of love. How we receive this invitation, therefore, is important, not just to those who have given it to us as a nation, but to each of us individually as brothers and sisters. Jesus said, look, I am standing at the door knocking. If one of you hears me calling and opens the door, I will come in and share a meal with that person and that person with me. The sense in which the truth of God's love comes to meet us is a profoundly Christian image of the one who knocks on our door and wishes to spend time with us. That sense of a friend coming to meet us, even in difficult circumstances, offers a way forward in understanding the meaning of the statement's words and intent. This is the form, the living heart of the statement. And he talks about this being a walking together then. We walk together through this statement. The statement does not offer a promise of fixing every injustice, but a First Nations voice that can work with Parliament to help address the tangible struggles that people of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander identity are facing right now with regard to the crisis of health, judicial injustice, and the educational gap. These are things that you and I just mentioned as well, Caroline. These are serious issues, and they require serious problem solving and commitment, a spirit of agreement, of walking together. He then goes on to talk about how the statement, his interpretation is that it's soaked with images of time. And he said, consider these examples, each conveying a notion of the past mixing with the future. Phrases like, the first sovereign nations, from the creation, from time immemorial, more than 60,000 years ago, who were born therefrom, remain attached thereto, and must one day thither be to be united with our ancestors. Possessed a land for 60 millennia, disappears from world history in merely the last 200 years. In 1967, we were counted. In 2017, we seek to be heard. We leave base camp and start our trek for a better future. He says here, these invocations of time can be challenging, but so many of us have become impatient in busyness and urgency. If it is deemed important, we want it now. This, however, is not why time is given to us. It carries a deep spiritual significance and is a gift offered for our personal and communal transformation. The Hebrew Scriptures and the New Testament continually urge us to turn to what is good and true while being humble enough to recognize that time is not of our own making. The early Christians were told that it was not for them to know the times or the dates set by the authority of God the Father. And then he goes on to talk about how this is a divine time. So I'll just read that a little bit quickly, talking about what this moment, what this referendum is. The Hebrew Scriptures also warn us about losing heart or loving something other than our Creator and our human sisters and brothers. He quotes, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. This biblical text urges us to avoid distraction from what is important and be watchful against falseness and the wasting of time. Does not our nation find itself at a moment, a Kairos time, and Kairos here marks out an amount of time or like a divinely appointed time of decision? And do we not have a responsibility to reject fear and ignorance and to be a united people that hears every voice? There will always be political jostling and place for power manipulation in every national debate. But when it comes to how we proceed as a nation, the path of empathy and constructive dialogue is needed. An ear for listening from the heart and for listening to the hearts of others. And then he goes on to describe the importance of the heart, right? And he says the following, the heart is not merely part of our physicality and our embodiment, but a way of describing the center of our being in a world of suffering and distraction. St. John Henry Newman had as his motto, heart speaks to heart. And he says, Christian witness is always to be the witness of human fraternity, especially among those who suffer or are vulnerable. Importantly, the heart is not the bearer of superficial emotivism and the tendency to reduce human character down to simple markers of political identity. Rather, the heart is a place of desire, touching upon intellect and affectivity. That is to say, emotion is an integral part of the story, and empathy must play a crucial role if we are to find any constructive paths on the way to reconciliation between fellow Australians. Time serving each other will be time well spent in this walking together, heart speaking to heart. Then he goes on to tie it to the Mass and the Eucharistic liturgy, where he says, the celebrant says to people, lift up to your hearts, to which God's people respond, we lift them up to the Lord. He says, as the first disciples encountered the risen Jesus, they recounted how their hearts were burning within us as they recognized him at the breaking of the bread. Catholic Christians are not meant to be passive witnesses to the unfolding of history around them, but to carry a flame of divine self-emptying into our local context, wherever they may be, and to transform them by the meeting of God's heart with each human heart that we encounter. So he's calling this a transformative time. He's calling us to be our baptism, which is to be transformative, to allow the work of Christ to flow through us. So his conclusion for his section about the heart is, what can we learn from this and how might we carry this forward? We are called to hear the longings of the heart and to put our heart into the practical work that beckons us. As the psalmist puts it, may he give you the desire of your heart and make all your plans succeed. So I'll just read the conclusion. I could read this whole thing, right? Which, I don't, but anyway, I'm not sure what copyright would do with us with that. But I'll just read the conclusion, and maybe if you want to react to anything you've heard, Caroline. So it says, the words of the statement are encapsulated by the mark of the 250 delegates who attended the conference and reached consensus. Hence, it concludes, in 1967 we were counted. In 2017 we seek to be heard. We leave base camp and start our trek across this vast country. We invite you to walk with us in a movement of the Australian people for a better future. And he says, I hope that Catholic Christians will join the trek that has left base camp. I hope that the body of Christ, in all its mysterious sense of purpose and discipleship, will be present on that pilgrimage, lifting up hearts and sharing a song of hope and authentic reconciliation. I hope our hands will be marked by the impact of the hard work of mercy for our Indigenous brothers and sisters, who need us walking with them to remedy the health crisis, the education gap, the suffering in families and young people. And more than just lifting hearts, I trust in faith and in hope that we will be given hearts as we seek to ensure the First Peoples' voice is given flesh in the constitution of this land we call Australia. That was one amongst many, many, many beautiful essays that I've read so far. But from a Catholic perspective, from what you've heard from, you know, what the Archbishop of Melbourne is calling us to do, what do you think, Caroline?
Well, definitely as Catholics, as Christians, we have a duty to be without prejudice, because it's easy to be prejudiced, like people just naturally are, right? And we've got to really use our hearts and our minds and think about what our people here, our precious Indigenous people, need. And they don't need us to be prejudiced against them. They don't need us to be judgmental towards them. They need us to be Christ-like, and they need us to have compassion and to find out what they need and to help them to be recognized as people and to be included in this country. And that's our duty as a Christian. To do that to everyone, to the poor, to the mentally ill, to everybody. So we need to put our prejudices, our judgments, anything that's negative to the side and just say, okay, what needs to be done? And let's get on and do it. And that's how I feel, basically.
No, that's beautiful. Yeah, in a year when the church is doing a synod on citadelity, which if we translate into plain English is being a church that listens, we don't need to wait for the Pope to say, be a church that listens. We need to be a church that listens now. And that's discipleship. It's part of discipleship, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that we listen to others. And if we have a percentage of our population who are overrepresented in poor health outcomes, poor educational outcomes, and all the other outcomes, you know, massive incarceration and all those kinds of things, then clearly we can't just say business as usual fix this, because it hasn't fixed it yet and it's not likely to either.
No.
All the interventions and things that governments have imposed haven't worked. We're still in the same place, really.
And the governmental stuff is just the beginning.
Yeah.
Right? It's a law thing. But we're a people thing. We're people. We can help people. If there's something we can do to help them, then we should do it.
Yeah. And that's the core of listening heart to heart, isn't it? When heart speaks to heart.
That's right. Yeah.
Great. So if anyone is listening who's Australian or even not, maybe have experience with, you know, because I know that I'm pretty sure that just about every other country that has an Indigenous population, or the majority anyway, already have a treaty of some kind and some kind of, you know, constitutional recognition. So we're a bit behind the curve on that one.
We are so behind.
Yeah. So if you're in a country that has this and you want to tell us about the process, we'd love to know. Or if you're an Australian or even an Aboriginal Australian, we'd love to hear from you as well.
Mm.
So with that, Caroline, let's move on. And it's time to talk about science.
For science.
You have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Can you reverse the polarity?
I'll do my best.
So, Caroline, a bit of background. I honestly believed through watching Wallace and Gromit that the moon was made of cheese. You're actually going to debunk that today and tell us what the core of the moon is actually made of. While I'm slightly disappointed that it's not what I thought, I am very, very curious about this topic. So, Caroline, over to you.
All right. So, what is the moon made of? We'll find out. Okay. I've been reading about what's inside the moon. Okay. A recent study published in the Journal of Nature has been able to define more accurately the structure of the inside of the moon. But before I get to that, a little bit of background. So astronauts on the NASA Apollo missions between 1969 and 1972 actually placed 5 seismometers over that time on the moon's surface to see if they could pick up any movement on the surface. And when they did detect some movement, they actually called them moonquakes. And Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong on the famous Apollo mission that, you know, landed men on the moon were the first astronauts to place these seismometers on the moon. So we've got data coming, you know, from back then, okay? The information received from the seismometers indicated that the moon probably has differentiated layers. So they think that denser material is in the core of the moon and less dense material was near the surface. And before this, it was easy to think that maybe the moon was just a big rock, like, you know, just one layer of rock, like there are other moons around other planets that are just, you know, little rocky moons. So it was pretty easy just to think that. However, we've got some more information.
So what you're saying is that the moon is like an onion, maybe?
Like it has layers, yes.
That's right. It has layers like an onion, yeah. So
from that famous documentary, that's a reference from the famous documentary,
Shrek. Called Shrek. Yes, it's very informative. Yeah, recommend everyone watch it.
Yes. Now, in 2011, NASA actually studied some of the seismometer data, and using this information from the Apollo missions, they found that the moon most likely has an inner core similar to Earth's. They found that it had a solid iron-rich inner core with a radius of about 150 miles and a fluid outer core composed mostly of liquid iron and has a radius of about 205 miles. And then there's a partially molten boundary layer with a radius of about 300 miles. And then they also found that the core contained light elements such as sulfur, and that's very similar to the layer around Earth's core, which also contains sulfur and oxygen. So the study I'm referring to today talks about study of the seismometer data, and this is done by a research team from the Côte d'Azur University in the Institution of Celestial Mechanics and Ephemeris Calculations, or the IMCC in France.
Great name.
Yes. And they've been able to confirm that the dense inner core of the moon actually really does exist and there are layers. And the team used a computer model based on the Apollo's geological information that coming from the seismometers and the NASA's GRAIL mission, which was actually launched in September 2011. So these are the missions that were launched after NASA actually came up with that other information just from the seismometers. So NASA's GRAIL mission involved two spacecraft named Ebb and Flow, which studied the internal structure and composition of the moon by measuring variations in the moon's gravitational field. And they were able to create a high-resolution gravity map of the moon. The GRAIL mission was also able to locate regions called mascons, which are mass concentrations of strong gravitational pull. Theorize that these would have been formed when large comets or asteroids impacted the moon when the surface of the moon was much hotter. So in its, in its early days, like I mentioned, these spacecraft were launched in September 2011, and then they were purposely crashed into the moon's surface to end the mission. So the data that the researchers examined based on the density of the material inside the moon and determined by measurements that were taken, that there is indeed a differentiation of materials and that there is an inner solid, mostly iron core, and outer core, which is more fluid or viscous.
Mm.
And it also indicated that there's an overturn that occurs in the core. So over time, dense elements sink towards the inner core while lighter elements remain in the outer core. So from the Apollo and the GRAIL data, the research team were able to determine that the inner core is about 310 miles or 500 kilometers for those who like kilometers in diameter, which makes up about 15% of the moon's entire width. In comparison, the Earth's inner core is closer to 50% of its diameter. So out of this, another outcome of the study came an inference as if to if there was and when there was a strong magnetic field around the moon. Now, the moon doesn't have a magnetic field today, but it's suggested through the study that it may once have had one.
Mm.
So on Earth, there is a strong magnetic field, and it's driven by the molten iron liquid outer core, which also forms a magnetosphere, which is where the solar winds and the Earth's magnetic field meets. The flowing of the liquid metal actually generates an electrical field, and the rotation of the Earth on its axis causes the electrical currents to form a magnetic field. And on a side note, the magnetosphere is extremely important to us and to all life on Earth, as it actually protects us from the high amounts of radiation that's emitted from the sun. It also helps to keep the atmosphere in place by preventing the erosion via solar wind. So if we didn't have the magnetosphere, basically we'd hardly have any atmosphere and we'd be bombarded by all this radiation coming from the sun. It's thought that the moon used to have a magnetic field through magnetic studies of the lunar rocks and the conformation of the solid inner core of the moon. So these two together point the existence of a lunar magnetic field in the past about 4.25 billion years ago.
Not that long ago.
So there we go. What I thought that was a really interesting study. They actually got some more information from it, just more than just talking about the layers of the moon, like it has the inner core and the outer core. They also learned about the magnetic field and the overturn, you know, the kind of movement of the core, the outer core, the inner core, the lightness and heaviness of the elements, and, you know, where it all settles in the core. So that's quite interesting.
Yeah, I found it fascinating because, I actually just thought that the moon was a lump of rock as well. Like, honestly, is it similar to the Earth?
Yeah.
It's not like plates moving under the surface or?
No. So it's not like it's not like continents and things like that we have, obviously.
Like, we're not going to find any moon lava is what I'm getting at, right?
Yeah, but there is a kind of seismic activity that they do measure, you know. Yeah, I thought it was very interesting that, yes, number one, that there is a core in the middle of the moon, and that there is, you know, the seismic activity, and that there was a magnetic field once. I thought that's pretty interesting because it's easy when you look at the moon to think it's a big rock.
Yeah, you know? I mean, they would have been shocked maybe to detect quakes on the moon
Yeah.
In the first place, maybe, I wonder. Like, it's like, oh, okay, it does that. Yeah.
But it's great that they've obviously been thinking about this before the Apollo missions, because they had the thought to put the seismometers on the moon itself.
Yes.
And it's so great that they did, because we have all that data to study. And now, you know, obviously researchers are studying that data. So it's really interesting that they can do that.
Yeah, whoever had the foresight to put those on the moon, give that guy a medal.
Yeah. He deserves a medal for sure.
Yeah, and we go back to this a lot, but, you know, obviously the Artemis missions are going to give us a lot more now as well.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, so research builds on research, and we'll find out even more information. And once you can actually get on the moon and spend some time there and take some time with studies, obviously you're going to find out more information.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. I love it. I can't wait to see humans return to the moon to do more there as well.
Yeah, no, that'll be great. I wish they'd hurry up.
Safely. Yeah, hurry up. Yeah, get to the moon. Come on.
Yeah, otherwise we'll be watching it from heaven. It's going to take a while. Yeah.
Well, hopefully they've got good reception there so we can see it, you know. Yeah, they've got NASA TV in heaven. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for that. That's an awesome topic. So, yeah, we'll be watching the moon literally, and moon news as well. Hopefully there'll be something about that. Let's move on then, Caroline. Let's just talk about some things that have been entertaining us.
I don't know where you get your delusions, laser brain.
This is not what we came here to do.
No, but it's what I'm going to do.
I have a plan.
You've got a plan.
I have part of a plan.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
So, I've got one. This is a pretty good one. Since the pandemic, I've only been to the cinemas, like the actual cinema, indoor cinemas, twice. I've been to the drive-in a couple of times. But last year, we were invited to watch the Minions movie, which we did. All right, big deal. It was great. Nothing unexpected there. Damien and I, you know, tend to watch a lot of Marvel movies. Like, there's, you know, lots of father-son stuff that we do in terms of movies that we look forward to. So we've fallen a little bit behind. We've actually got a few movies that we need to catch up on, but one of our favorite franchises is the Guardians of the Galaxy. So I had some free movie tickets that had been lying here and I had to use them. And I said, Damien, if nothing's happening, this was last week, if nothing's happening, do you want to go and see Guardians of the Galaxy 3? And his face lit up. He's like, oh, you know, like, yeah, let's go see it. So, so we saw Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, and I won't spoil anything. But I would say probably 8 out of 10, right? You know, there's a couple of things that are just like, you know, storytelling they have to get from one place to another and whatever. Who cares, right? The point is, it's still classic Guardians of the Galaxy. It's a good step up from where they've been in the first two movies as well. And this one really goes for the feels though. So it still has the good old comedy that you expect, you know, the sometimes inappropriate, the sometimes physical comedy, my favorite comedy of all is like when they're in a really serious situation and they just can't stop arguing with each other. Like, you know, they're like, it's life and death and they're telling each other off. It's the only, you know, while people are on the sidelines of observing going, oh my goodness, you know, is this what you guys always do? So I love that element. Like all three movies, it's one of the best things that I love is just, we're all going to die and all they can do is argue with each other about what to do. So I love that. It's the best thing about them. But this one, yeah, also has some pretty serious moments. And the most serious is it goes into Rocket's backstory. So I won't say anything about it, but it goes into his backstory and it's kind of heartbreaking, right? You know, it's this CGI raccoon. I say that as my dog jumps up in my lap. they really turn him into a great character. I like what they did with his backstory. Like it all obviously goes back to the comics, which I haven't read. So that they get their material from there, but it gives you a good background into why he is the way he is. It links him to, you know, the baddie of the film, which I won't say anything about, but it's a lot of fun. The other thing is it's also a conclusion of this trilogy as well. So although, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy will continue in some way, shape or form, again, I won't spoil anything. This finishes the Guardians in its current iteration. We'll say that much. All right. I won't say why and I won't say how. And it might not be what you expect because there are obvious conclusions we can make about why I'm saying that, but you have to watch it yourself. When it comes out on Disney Plus, or if you want to go to the movies, but it's a good conclusion and it sets up the future pretty well too. I think it's also a fun movie again, just because of the silliness of it. But I like that every character has some kind of growth, you know, has something important to do. And yeah, it was just a lot of fun. Like, you know, it's a very quotable movie. You know, you're going to laugh a lot. There's a lot of moments to laugh out loud as well. It's also the longest of the three films as well, so it's a bit longer than the others. Yeah, but, you know, really well done. There may be a few tear-jerking moments, I'm just warning everyone. The only warning I would say is if you're planning on seeing it and you're sensitive about animal cruelty, just be warned that, yeah, there's some animal cruelty, I'll just say that. You know, in context and for good reason, but I won't say much more than that. But yeah, overall, 8 out of 10, I loved it. And I'm glad that there's now a Guardians of the Galaxy trilogy that I can watch and enjoy, you know, every movie without going, oh, not that this is the bad movie. They're all good in their own way. Yeah.
Excellent.
It made me watch the other two movies recently as well. So,
well, yeah, now that you're saying it, I'm going to have to go and watch the first two. Like, I've watched kind of half, not fully watched them all, because honestly, they weren't my favorite films.
Ah, Caroline.
I think they're growing on me.
Yeah.
But as I've watched the other films, like with their characters involved and things, it makes me want to go back and like properly watch those standalone.
I will always maintain that the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie is the best of all the Marvel films, and nothing has topped it yet for me. Nothing has beaten it.
Debatable.
Yeah, but that's it. Yeah, we could have that argument. Yeah. I know Spider-Man gives it a run for its money, but I still.
Pretty good.
Yeah, Spider-Man trilogy is good, yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But Guardians is better. But anyway, yeah. So, Caroline, what's been entertaining you?
Yeah, a few things. I think a lot of TV, actually, rather than movies. Although we did watch the Mario film a little in the school holidays. So a few weeks ago, and that was really entertaining. I was going in thinking, oh, it's just another kid's film. I'm just going to sit there, eat popcorn and endure it. But I really got into it. It was really great.
Yeah, it was enjoyable. Yes, yeah.
It was great. And I am a Mario fan. Like, I love Nintendo. So, yeah, I could relate to the characters. And they made it really funny. They had Shigeru Miyamoto. He's a creator of a lot of the games, especially, and including Pikmin, which I love. So he had an input in the film, which is, you can tell, it was really good. It was really funny. That was great.
Voiced by Chris Pratt as
well.
Yeah,
he was Mario, yeah. And I couldn't pick it up. He did, some people say they didn't like that, but I thought he did a great job.
I thought he did a good job, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. I hardly really ever agree with movie critics, to be honest. So
yeah, true. You know, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes there are movies that you just don't need to read too deeply into and just enjoy. And the Mario movie is one of those. It's basically Minions with Mario characters. Basically,
that's it. Yes. Yeah. And it was from Illumination.
That's exactly right. Same company.
It makes
a
lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Before you move on, because you mentioned that the movie, I'll just pitch quickly that SQPN recently did a Secrets of Movies and TV shows about the Mario movie. They've already done it. So so if you enjoyed the Mario movie, go and listen to that episode as well.
Yes. And then other things in terms of watching, I finished Lego Masters was on. There was Lego Masters Grandmasters, which they had Lego Masters from previous series come on.
The best of the best, yeah.
The things they can do with Lego blows my mind. I love Lego. You know, we've spoken about Lego before. Me and my sons love Lego. So I just really enjoyed that series. The guys, girls outdid themselves. Amazing. So creative. I could never do any of that stuff, but I love watching it. So good.
Power of their imagination, isn't it? Yeah.
It's crazy. It's so good. And I've started MasterChef series. I think it's 15 now. And Australian MasterChef, which has a bit of a sad tone this year.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Unfortunately, one of the hosts, Jock Zonfrillo, he was much loved, fantastic guy, really encouraging to the contestants and just like a good family man. He passed away just as the series was about to air and they found him in a hotel and he apparently died of natural causes. So young, 46 years old, only a couple years older than me. I really felt it. I don't know him, obviously, but I really felt it. So I feel very bad. May he rest in peace. Can we just say a little prayer for his soul?
We offer prayers for him, yes. Yep.
And for his family, because he left behind a wife and some children, which is some young children. Yeah. Having said that, I thought, well, I'm not going to not watch it. I will watch it in his honor and watch it. And it doesn't disappoint. He's great. The other hosts are great and the contestants are great so far. So I am enjoying it. And another quick thing, Jimmy Akers' Mysterious World, the last episode of Mike Malloy, Iron Mike. Oh, my goodness.
I need to hear that one. Yes, yeah, yeah.
Go and listen to it. You've got to listen to it. I'm in two minds, really, because I feel really bad that his friends were trying to murder him so they could get an insurance payout.
Yeah.
But it is an amazing story. May he rest in peace as well, because yeah, obviously they ended up killing him. But yeah, what a story. That really, yeah, I can't stop thinking about it. So well done, Jimmy and Dom, on that one.
Yeah, I need to listen to all of it. Yeah, on that, Caroline, just quickly, yeah, there are some episodes where he goes through a mystery and talks about it and, you know, and gives conclusions. And there are some episodes which are just storytelling, and I actually like those a lot too.
Yes, I do too.
He's a good storyteller. Like, what I like is that he gets different sources and stitches them together. So it's not just one source that he's working on. He's obviously had to look at a few different things.
Very well researched.
But I do like the storytelling element of it as well. Like, you don't want to speed ahead, or sometimes there are two-parters. You don't want to Google and find out what happens. I just want to wait, because I prefer the storytelling.
No, that's right. And with this one, there is a second part which comes out today, like of our day of recording. So it will have already been out. We're going to find out what happens to the people who, were attempting to kill him. So this is a two-parter. I love two-parters. I'm right into it. I'm into any length. I just love all the episodes. Just
a good stretched out mystery. Yeah, yeah.
It's yeah, great. I just love finding out. There's a lot of things I've never heard of before, and I just love hearing about it and then, yeah, Googling it. And then I end up watching documentaries on it and buying books about it. And so, yeah, it's really inspirational to me. It's just so good.
Yeah, no, good one. Yeah, it's a great podcast. Add it to your playlist, people, as well as Catholics of Oz, obviously. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So on that note, let's finish there. So we've managed to get through the episode. My dog is actually, she's off my lap and running up and down the hallway now. So I don't know if you can hear that. We've had bird noises. We've had dog scratching on the door noises. So
we've done had it all today.
This is our pet cast. We'll actually have to bring them on the show at some point, I think. We'll do a video version of this and have our pets.
A version. Them all and just chaos.
Yeah, chaos. That's exactly what it will be.
I mean, for me, it will be chaos. Birds, cats, dog, stick insects. Should I invite the chickens?
Yeah. Why not? Just get Harry to bring a chicken in. Yep. He's the chicken whisperer.
He is the chicken whisperer. Yeah. Harry's very good at cuddling the chickens.
Yeah. All right. So let's finish up there then. So thanks so much for joining us for our episode 97 of The Catholics of Oz. Before we go, we'd love to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to continue The Catholics of Oz. Today, we would love to thank Hesha, Michelle Q, George S, Stephen F, and James B. Through their generous donations at sqpn.com/give, they make it possible for The Catholics of Oz and all of the other great shows at StarQuest to continue. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. Also, we'd love to know your thoughts on the topics that we've discussed today. You can send us feedback by visiting sqpn.com/oz, where you can also find links from today's topics. While you're on the SQPN website, don't forget to sign up to the Insiders Club newsletter to get updates about your favorite shows, sqpn.com/about/newsletter, and be part of the conversation about things that are being spoken about in your favorite shows by joining us at the Discord community, sqpn.com/discord. You can also find out more about our shows on SQPN's Facebook page, facebook.com/starquestmedia, or on Twitter, at SQPN, and also on Instagram, just search for StarQuest Media. And The Catholics of Oz also has its own Facebook page. Caroline, I think we need to post some pet photos up soon. Facebook.com/Catholics of Oz, where you can join us in discussing all of our latest episodes. And you can reach us by good old email at catholicsofoz@sqpn.com. Caroline, thank you so much for being on our return show today.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thank you.
And once again, I'm Lindsay Sand, and thank you so much for joining us for episode 97 of The Catholics of Oz on StarQuest.
Here's another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy. Let's Science. Find the show wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/science.